Let's get started. I want to wrap up our discussion of Chol of Akum. I'm printing up Makoros for Pas Akum, so that should be ready as soon as it's done printing. So we'll get working with that Bezras Hashem today. Grab a copy when you can. It should be on top of the printer. Okay. So let's try to combine the last two topics. They really are two different topics, and each one deserves its own study, but for us today, we'll try to sort of combine them, which is, number one, the Chiddush of the Pre-Chadash, and number two, the Chiddush of Rav Moshe. Right? They're not the same. It's very important to keep them separate, and each one has its positives and negatives. Right? So the Pre-Chadash's Chiddush is that if you understand the Gemara that the concept of Ein Davar Tameh Be'edro that the Gemara raises, there's no non-kosher animals in this fellow's flock. So by definition, what are we choshish for? So that basically the meaning of the word pshita over there, how you translate that word makes all the difference, right? The Gemara has a discussion and they say, well, what are we talking about over here that the Yisrael has to see the guy, right? If there's a davar tameh, if there's no davar tameh be'edro, pshita what? It, what's it, right? It's mutter to drink the milk if what?
If there's no davar tameh be'edro.
Yes, but in other words, if you're where? Where are you? You're at home. This fellow is milking. He's milking his cow, and you show up 5 hours later, 10 hours later, 3 days later, and you say, oh, do you have any milk for me? Sure, I milked this cow 3 days ago, it's sitting in the refrigerator, and it's all ready to go. So if you say that, there's no davar tameh be'edro, pshita, that you're allowed to drink it. So that's basically saying that there's no din of chol of Yisrael or chol of Akum if there is... What? If it's Ein Davar Tameh Be'edro. Right? Well, we just started anyway, so we may as well just join in. Right.
So there's no din of...
We can move the mechitza a little bit.
So there's no din of chol.
So there's no din of chol. In other words, if you learn the Gemara that way, the word pshita means there's no din of chol of Akum if there's Ein Davar Tameh Be'edro. Right? Elach ma'eskino, we must be talking about there is a Davar Tameh Be'edro, and the chiddush of the Mishnah is that... You don't even have to watch all the time. You just have to, spot check. You have to spot check, right? And we're not going to have time to go through. I sincerely hope, and if you didn't, please, by all means, go through the Shulchan Aruch and the Nosei Kelim that I gave you about the details about what's actually required, right? Please get a chance to go through those. Don't use just the summaries that we're giving together as a substitute for actually learning the Makoros inside properly. Okay, so this is the way that the Pre-Chadash seems to be learning the Gemara. Others seem to say, no. What does it mean, pshita? Pshita means, if there's no davar tameh be'edro, pshita, that it's enough to just be sitting there. Of course, meaning the case of the Yisrael just sitting there, of course that's enough. What are we afraid is going to happen?
What else would we have to do?
What?
What else would we have to do?
Yeah, what else? What, you want the guy to stand over them? Right? You want else? So then the question is, so if that's the pshita,
yeah,
what's so pshita about that? I mean, like, what do you mean? The pshita that I have to be there? Right? So that's why hopefully you got a chance to see the Beis Meir and the Chasam Sofer, and they try to speak out what the pshita is. So maybe the pshita is, well, if there's no davar tameh be'edro, what are we afraid of? What could possibly go wrong now? If there's no davar tameh be'edro, what could possibly go wrong?
Yeah.
Right, so one possibility, like we saw in Rabbeinu Peretz, right? Somebody brings it in before. So possibly that's what's going on, but probably not. And I'll tell you why. Because here we say, Ein Davar Tameh Be'edro. So what's the definition of Ein Davar Tameh Be'edro? Meaning, Prashtas, as Rabbeinu Peretz would say, just to get started with the whole, pshita, you first have to do an inspection to make sure Ein Davar Tameh Be'edro, which means not just that there are no non-kosher animals, but there's also no non-kosher milk in the fridge. Right? In other words, we don't want the fellow to then to then add non-kosher milk, right? It's the difference between, if you look in the Beis Yosef's quote of the Mordechai and the, I don't know if all the Gemaras have it, but the one, my version of the Gemara in the Mordechai has a little star, and then it says Lahafriz Alaminyan or something like that, to Alamida, sorry, to make a greater volume of milk, maybe he'll already have some Chol of Tameh sitting around. Right, Beis Yosef doesn't quote that line from Rabbeinu Peretz. I don't know if it's like a Girsa thing or whatever. I didn't really look into it, but either way, he says that maybe there's a whole chashash that the guy's going to want to start off with half a bucket of chol of tameh, and then everything he milks from that is on top of that bucket, you know, on top of that half a bucket. So maybe that's the shot.
Is that a problem?
Like, sure, it's a problem. What do you mean? Well, again, let's assume, for argument's sake, the chashash. Now, that goes back to day one, when we were talking about what's the chashash exactly, whether it's a chashash of once in a while, right? So you have the rove poskim, like the shach, right, that it's a chashash of an issur derabanan that'll be less than it'll be more than a 60th, but less than half, right? And then you have the poskim who suggest that maybe, no, like the pritoar and Ritzik Pesach Frank, who suggest maybe we're worried about once in a while, it'll be a problem of mechza al mechza, right? So then... So either way, whatever we're choshish for, so then it's possible that this will happen. So okay, so nice. We have to definitely check in advance that there's no chal of tameh sitting around, and that's called ein davar tameh be'edro. Right, you have to actually know that there aren't non kosher animals or non kosher milk sitting around before we can even say the pshita. So then, what's the pshita? Pshita that what? So if there's nothing non kosher in the house. And everything is, we're starting with, you know, is kosher. So then what's the pshita that, if we hold like the Chasam Sofer, if we hold like the Beis Meir, what's the pshita? The Gemara says pshita that you don't have to what? Pshita that you don't have to stand over the guy. But of course you have to be there. Of course you have to be sitting around. You can't just not show up ever and assume that everything's going perfectly. Why? Because maybe the guy's going to go and he's going to get either a non-kosher animal and some non-kosher milk. That's what we're choshish for. He's going to go and bring in extra stuff. He's going to bring in camels. He's going to bring in pigs. He's going to start milking other animals. And that's what we're choshish for. So how is you sitting around going to do anything? What?
It's
a deterrent, because if the guy gets up and walks out of the house in the middle, you're like, oh, excuse me, sir, where are you going? What's going on here? Oh, no, nothing. I have to run an errand for my cousin. Right? And then he shows up with 10 pigs. Like, what? Yeah, my cousin wanted me to pig sit for him. Like, what? This is not okay. You can't just go bring in a bunch of non-kosher animals into the mix. So he's saying your sitting there is gufa the deterrent, meaning because otherwise... In other words, it's a two-step process. Step number one, you understand that the pshita means you're sitting there, right? And then you have to ask yourself, step number two, well, what on earth could possibly be the point of sitting there if I can't even see? Right? Right? So that's the answer. The answer is, oh, must be you're there to deter him from leaving and introducing something new into the equation. In other words, you know the equation right now, everything's kosher. So you have to be around so that he won't then go add something new into the equation. Yeah. I'm trying to represent that other camp of the Achronim who doesn't like the pre-Chadosh. Right? So this is the big machlokas. And it's really just it's what we call a machlokas Achronim, but it's just if you're learning Gemara, this is just two ways to read the Gemara. Right? It happens to be, going forward, we're not going to have so much Achronish Achronim going on the way we've had so far. In other words, just like, you know, so thank God the sugya of Pasachim is mostly in the Rishonim. But it's the concept here is really just a simple discussion. How do you read the Gemara? Is the Gemara, when the Gemara says Pshita, does that mean Pshita, go home, don't bother? Or does it mean Pshita that you can just be sitting there, but you don't have to stand over the guy and watch him. And that leads to this huge nafkamina. Now, I want to be very clear on the conclusion of the pre-chadash. The conclusion of the pre-chadash is that if you live in a city where there are no non-kosher animals, or a place where it's more expensive to milk the non-kosher animals than it is to milk the kosher animals, you don't, there is no gzeira of Cholav Akum. Right, the Pre-Chadosh was in Amsterdam, and he said, in Amsterdam, the minig is, we don't keep the laws of Cholav Yisrael. We don't care about that.
So if you live in a city
where there are either A, no non-kosher animals, or B, non-kosher milk is more expensive than kosher milk, so then you don't have to be choshesh for Cholav Akum. Yeah?
Why are we bringing in lumber in this case that the system is much less available?
Because he's saying that there has to be... there has to be a reason why the Akum would ever add the non-kosher milk in. We're not... The guy is not interested in just tripping up the Jews and making them... eat non-kosher. That's not... Maybe if he's an anti-Semite, he wants to make the Jews eat non-kosher, fine. First of all, if you think about the perspective of an anti-Semite trying to get the Jews to eat non-kosher, it only makes sense if he tells them. I mean, let's say you're Stam an anti-Semite. You want to make the Jews violate the Torah. So if you're making the Jews violate the Torah and you never even tell them, so that Lishita Schat makes no sense. You hold the whole Torah as an Irish guide, and what are you doing? You know? So then, if you're secretly making them violate the Torah, so you're secretly making them do something they don't even know about, and the whole thing doesn't even get started, so like there's nothing in it for you, right? If you would say at the end of the meal, ha ha, everything you ate here was non-kosher, so then you could go home and you're like, good, I made all the Jews really sad, and you're very happy with yourself. But like, if you're not going to tell, you're just saying, ha ha, so there has to be a reason why you would do it. Right, there has to be a reason why you would want the Jews to eat the non-kosher. So it must be either it's saving you money, it's saving you time, right? It's easier for you. But in this case, it's neither easier nor is it saving you money. It's costing you money. So why would you get involved?
So it inherently just takes away the chashash.
What?
It inherently takes away the
chashash because the whole, in other words, the pre-chadosh's chiddush is that the entire idea of Cholav Akum was not what we call a davar sheba minyan, that it's usur no matter what. And the Chachamim said so, and that's all there is to it. No, it was a chashash based on real life possibilities. And if there's no real life possibility of it happening, then what are we even talking about over here? So there's no, why would the guy wouldn't do it for the money? He wouldn't do it for the revach of, you know, having an easier job. He'd have to schlep out there and go start finding some camels to milk. It's not worth it for him. Yeah.
So in a city where there's no non-kosher animals and like it's more expensive, would you say then the people who say pshita that it's, you have to sit there and make sure that nothing bad is happening, he doesn't go, would you still have to do the same thing in that city?
So the pre-chadosh sounds like, as long as you are up to date on the mitzias of what's going on in your city, you don't have to go inspect every single farm.
According to the other
opinions, say, what are you talking about? It's a davar sheba minyan. The Chachamim made a takana. You can't drink Cholav Akum. You think the reason doesn't apply to you? That's very nice for you, but that doesn't help in any way. So it's interesting. They play both sides. A lot of these achronim play both sides. They'll, like the Beis Meir will say, you say, for Beis Meir says also, there's no such place, right? They both say, there's another Achron that says the same thing. It says, there is no such place, right? He says, there's no such place as a city that doesn't have non-kosher animals in it. So every day, you walk down the street, you see a dog. Okay, so maybe this is dog milk, right? All mammals give milk, no?
Yeah.
Yeah, so every city has a cat, a dog, you know, we got bears. So they're all giving milk, right? Maybe it's bear's milk. So that's, I think that's like what we call a throw-in, you know, that's a throw-in taina. They didn't really mean it to say like, wow, that's the pshat, like we just slugged up the pre-chadosh. Nah, they just meant like, what are you talking about? There's no such place, blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't think they thought that was really true. They mean animals that are milked regularly for the sake of giving milk. Like, good luck, you know, I don't know, I can only speak for myself. I'm afraid enough of the bears. I'm not going over to the bear and milking it, you know? So he's saying, when they say there's no such city like that, I don't think they really mean there's no, it means there's no city that there's no commercially milked non-kosher animals.
But there are cities where it's just cows being milked.
Virtually all cities, yeah.
Since seems like a big reason that the Ogden was first built is financial, especially in the free cholesterol that comes out, because that's like, it's not a situation that's going to be cheaper than, you know, the word cholesterol anymore. I mean, so financially, it's such a financial like, dependency, then, and I don't want to be like focused on Jews, but if you have the same question about Jews, you need extra shomer on top of whatever person you want to account to begin with. Because at the end of the day, someone's struggling.
So there's no real din like that, but that's why essentially we have hashkachas bizmanei, you know, that really, everyone, if you get enough, either you get an angry Jew or you get an old-time Jew, you know, and they get upset about the concept, oh, the whole thing is a mafia, a rabbinic mafia, the vod of this, and the, oh, they're all mafias. And like, by the way, just a simple response, a simple response to all of these mafia things. And like, by the way, just for the record, once in a while it is. Once in a while it is a problem of just like territorialism or whatever. And like, we should, you know, be above that. We should be better than that. It's not, you know, Baruch Hashem, I'd say, in the royal sense of we, meaning we Jews, we mostly are better than that. You know, I don't work in any kind of kashrus industry, so, but I am a kashrus consumer. And I can say that you know, the vast majority of the time we are better than that, and it's you know we but you know there is once in a while where it's a little bit political, and we should work to overcome that, but getting back to what you were saying, in a time, so someone says, I worked in this hotel as a waiter when I was a kid, and you know, there was a hotel, I think it was in Long Beach. And there was one like hotel in Long Beach that everybody made simchas at, and well, I don't think we're talking about the Jackson, but this is pre-Jackson. But I worked in this hotel in Long Beach, and every big Rosh Hashiva went there. Rav Moshe ate there, and after he was nifter, his Rebbetzin ate there every Shabbos, and there was never a mashgiach, there was never hashkacha, there was never anything, right? Says because it was a frum guy working the kitchen, the same way you'd eat in the guy's house, you'd also eat in the guy's hotel. Like, what are we talking about? So. The two answers to that question: A, you know, unfortunately or fortunately, things have become much more complicated because of what goes into everything. Like, it's, you know, when I was a kid, we just read the ingredients and we ate it, and like, so the, you know, the average kid response is, "Well, you ate treif, haha," you know, but it's not true. Like in those days, when it said there's five ingredients in this item, there were five ingredients in this item. Like you know, you ever had a sucking candy? So you know why sucking candy is shiny on the outside? Because there's a bug extract that goes onto the outside of the candy that makes it shiny. It happens to be Rav Moshe holds that's kosher, for whatever reason. But like Lamais, at the end of the day, nowadays they make everything out of everything. There's no, you would be shocked at like what goes into, you know, what goes into anything. You know, and when people say something, oh, so it's vegan, it's organic, it doesn't mean anything. Saying, excuse me, it means something a certain percentage of the time, you know, but like there's no vegan police that goes around actually doing spot checks and inspections. But so we'll get to the FDA, but I'm saying like, if you write, there's no FDA for vegan. If you write vegan on the product and like you have the OV, you know, not the VOD of St. Louis, but like the OV, the vegan Ashkacha, you know, like it doesn't mean anything. Vegan? You definitely need vegan hashgach. My wife was telling me one time there's this protein powder that she sees on social media. All these people are using, and she just like, she was curious. She was like, oh, it's vegan. Okay, everyone says, yeah, it's okay because it's vegan. So she looked at the package. It said for allergy information. It says may contain trace amounts of shellfish. So first of all, that like should share their vegan hashgach. But like, but second of all, like shellfish is like the real non kosher fish. It's not like, you know, it's just not, it's not a salmon that didn't have a beard and payas. It's like. You know, it's, yeah.
So what were the issues of, let's say, someone getting a salad at a vegan restaurant?
I mean, they don't check for bugs. They, you know, and they, I don't know. I mean, again,
do they check for bugs, or can the owner say they check for bugs?
No, someone who's not neman, meaning someone who doesn't know what kashrus is, he's not a frum Jew. He's a frum Jew. So again, halakhically, there's a concept called Eid Echad Ne'eman Bisur, and this is going back to the second concern. The first concern I said is just like, nobody knows how to do it right, and like these big operations, you have so many people involved, right? But you should really talk to people. See, the second point is that you have to really know what you're doing. It's not. It's yes. The guy is Naaman to say, if I would go to this fellow's kitchen, I would eat in his kitchen. If I would go to his house, so I needed to get something to eat, I would eat there. But the bottom line is, you have to A, trust him and all his workers. You know, generally speaking, you go to somebody's house, they don't have 15 workers in the kitchen also doing things that you don't know what they're doing. And also, furthermore, there's also Bishul Akum Shilas in the vegan restaurants. But also it's just complicated. Like, life is complicated and kashrus is complicated. So even if the guy in your own kitchen, you control everything, you think you know everything. I mean, you probably do know everything that went into everything. In a commercial kitchen, it's not so easy. You really have to, the professional side of things. You could be a big buck in your adeya and be a terrible mashgiach. You know, it doesn't, you could know hilchos kashrus, doesn't mean you know the business of kashrus. So you need both. You need somebody who really knows what he's doing. And again, if they'll invite you to go into the back and you actually know what you're looking for and you inspect properly and you see everything's good, okay, so why are you worse than a mashgiach? You know, but like, okay, but you have to actually know what you're doing. So it's complicated, yeah.
Who's the opinion that said that as long as you don't need to watch the milk, as long as there are no
kashrus? So that's the pre-chadash's opinion, right? So the pre-chadash is really outvoted by most poskim, except the Chazon Ish seems to support the pre-chadash. The Chazon Ish seems to hold like the pre-chadash. The Chazon Ish sort of makes mention of the idea of government regulations. But he sort of goes back in the direction of the pre-chadash. So the biggest modern day poseik who seems to like the pre-chadash is the Chazon Ish. But then you get it was like the Chazon Ish sort of alluded to it, and he seemed to say that he holds like the pre-chadash. And then like all the people who ever met the Chazon Ish say, no, he never held to the pre-chadash. What are you talking about? It's ridiculous. Like the Stipler has a letter where he says. That disciple was his brother-in-law. So he says that during the War of Independence, there were some yeshiva bachrim who were so weak, and the Chazon Ish held that they could drink chalav akum from powdered milk, right? So and then you have this other fellow who said he once asked the Chazon Ish, and the Chazon Ish says, oh yeah, yeah, I was matir chalav akum. Next they're going to say I was matir eshes ish. You know, so whatever. I mean, who knows what the reality is? You know, sometimes all you have are the actual. Are the actual writings. In the writings, the Chazon Ish seems to hold like the pre-chadash. But many say that was what. So you say he was saying that derech pilpul ba'alma, derech limud ba'alma, not halacha l'maisa. Okay, so I challenge anyone to find someone who holds of the shitos of the Chazon Ish who also doesn't drink chol of Yisrael. You know, so that's very rare. But okay, l'maisa, at the end of the day, you have the pre-chadash. And you have those who are one interesting nekuda of the Beis Meir against the pre-chadash. So I think it's the Beis Meir. It could be the Chasam Sofer. I get the sheet that's jumbled in my head a little bit sometimes. Like again, the pre-chadash and the Chazon Ish on one side in terms of saying basically nowadays there's really very few places. There are places, by the way. There are places that they do milk non-kosher animals regularly. Those places, absolutely the pre-chadash would agree you must drink Chalav Yisrael, no doubt. Right? However, like the United States of America, many other countries, they do not milk non-kosher animals commercially. And it's certainly the non-kosher milk would be much more expensive, right? So and you can get it. I have a niece who was allergic when she was born. Now she's not, I don't think she's allergic anymore, but when she was born, she was allergic to all kinds of milk. And she had to drink pig's milk for a while. Because it was hard to get. Like you got it, you couldn't get like real pig's milk. You could get only, you could only get it in powder form. And it was very expensive and very hard to get. So there's no doubt if you were looking to get milk from a non-kosher animal, you can get it, but it's extremely expensive and hard to come by. They're not like, you know, commercial dairy farmers are not mixing pig milk into the regular milk. It would be a huge waste of money for them. But the Beis Meir says the opposite. The Beis Meir says, no, Gufa, because it's more expensive, that's why they're going to mix it in. Because they need certain amounts of milk. They need certain amounts of milk, and let's say there was one case like my niece where the person needed pig's milk, so they milked the pig and they have this whole huge vat of milk. But in those days, they didn't have refrigeration and they couldn't dehydrate it like that, so it was going to go to waste. So because it's so expensive, they're not going to throw it in the garbage, and they sold X amount. So because it's so expensive and it's so hard to come by, there's going to be extra amounts sitting around, and then they're going to take the extra amount that's sitting around and they're going to add it to the regular milk. They don't want to waste it completely. So, okay, you could take that svar or leave it, but that's an interesting counterpoint to the Prichadish svar. Yeah. Right, so that's why he's saying the expense. He rejects that notion that if it's more expensive, it's not going to be in there. He's saying, no, if it's more expensive, it's more likely to be in there because they're never going to want to waste it. They're not going to say, well, I milked, you know, I got a huge gallon of pig's milk and my customer only needed two cups. So what am I going to do with the rest of it? Throw it out? It's so expensive. So at least let me add it into the regular cow's milk so I'll at least get some money for it. It'll be a hatzala porta. Yeah.
Is the Brit Chadish known as a very big milk
in everything?
No,
in this, yeah.
Like
the Pri Chadish is more Mekel than Ramosha. Well, yes and no. I don't. Yes, obviously, but no. Also, let's move forward to Rav Moshe's opinion now. Okay, so Rav Moshe's opinion is not the opinion of the Pri. Rav Moshe's opinion is against the Pri Chadish. Rav Moshe's opinion against the Pri Chadish. He holds the Pri Chadish is not correct. Chasam Sofer is more accepted, right? And again, there is no. And hopefully you got a chance to see the Beis Yosef and the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah and the Shach. And they're all Machmir. And I wouldn't find in the Taz and the Shach any hint towards the Pri Chadash. I wouldn't find any hint at all towards the Pri Chadash. I think that there's no sad to say that the regular poskim and the Nosei Kalim on the Shulchan Aruch hold like the Pri Chadash. I think that's a fair thing to say. So if you want to say, well, it's a machlokas between the two most prominent poskim on either side is the Pri Chadash versus the Chasam Sofer, that's a true statement. But when you say, well, the Chasam Sofer holds against the Pri Chadash, so it seems like it's the Chasam Sofer plus the Shulchan Aruch Ramah Shach Taz. You know, like it's not just the Chasam Sofer. The Chasam Sofer is the one who's directly addressing the Pri Chadash. You know, but it's the mainstream opinion does not seem to entertain the Pri Chadash's Chiddush at all. And I would find it extremely hard to believe that none of these poskim lived in a place where, you know, cow's milk was not the overwhelming majority. You know? So I think it's important to keep that in mind. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about Rav Moshe. So Rav Moshe's Shita is that he calls it Chol of our companies. Now, Rav Moshe didn't do like modern Hebrew, and he said so he spelled all the English words in Yiddish spellings. So you end up getting like all these hard words to read. If you can read Yiddish spellings, it's not that bad. So yes, he's basically talking about Chol of our companies versus Chol of our farmers or farmars, right? So let's be clear. There is between farms. If you would go to like a random, you know, driving down the roads around here, you see a silo and a barn, and you go, you know, you see, oh, you have cows. I want to go get some of your farm fresh milk. Farm fresh milk, Rav Moshe is not makel at all. That would be an example of the Pri Chadash would be makel, and Rav Moshe is not makel. Because the Pri Chadash says, you think they're milking pigs on this farm?
Maybe.
Baloney. No, so you go into the farm, you see there are no pigs. Okay, so what are we talking about over here? The guy's selling farm fresh milk. You know, it's not pasteurized, not homogenized. It's, you know, all the time and effort we spent curing all these diseases now in the last 20 years, we tried to undo it. So, you know, we don't get a, we don't, whatever. I don't want to go off on a tangent over this, but like it's important to, there's a reason scientists have been working for the last 200 years to try to cure these diseases. And like, we don't want to bring them all back by not pasteurizing our milk, you know. So let's not get poisoned by the things that we worked so hard to eradicate. So you go to the farmer. So the Pri Chadash says, sure, buy the milk. What are you worried about? He milked a pig? To milk a pig is such a hassle. It's such a this. He doesn't even have a pig. It's so expensive, whatever. He's trying to sell some cow's milk. He's a cow farmer, right? So Pri Chadash would say, you can have. Rav Moshe says, you can't. Why? Because what's the whole basis for Rav Moshe's Heter? He's saying the goal of the Gemara of what does Chol of Yisrael mean? Chol of Yisrael doesn't mean that the rabbi blessed the milk. Chol of Yisrael means that the Jew supervised the milking. The Jew supervised the milking to the extent that there's a mirtas. Right? That's what the Gemara says. That you don't have to see the guy the whole time. Right? You could be sitting down. If you're sitting down, you can't see. Then when you stand up, you can see. So what does the Gemara say? What's the lashon of the Gemara there? Right? Somebody read it to me. What? that when you can't, no, the Gemara, when you can't, when you stand up, right?
Yeah.
Oh, what was that line? Came in the koi chazilei. Next words. Irtuse mertas, right? Since the guy knows when you stand up, you can see him, he's going to be scared all along. Right? He's going to be scared the whole time. So the Rav Moshe just says, the goal of Chol of Yisrael is one thing only. Scare the guy straight. You want to scare him straight. He wants to mix in the non-kosher milk, but he's too scared because he thinks he's going to get caught. Once you can accomplish that, it doesn't matter if the person accomplishing it is a Jew or a non-Jew, that is called Chol of Yisrael. Yeah.
Isn't that in the case of the Gemara, though, that's when there is a Dover Tamer?
Right.
Why is what Moshe talking about, isn't that when there's a Dover Tamer?
No, so Kal v'chomer when there's no Dover Tamer. I mean, Rav Moshe is not getting involved in the Pre-Chodesh's Chiddush. The Pre-Chodesh says, when there's no Dover Tamer, there's no Din Chol of Yisrael. We paskin not like the Pre-Chodesh. We say the minig is like the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah that even when there's no Dover Tameh, there still needs a Mirta. See, the guy still needs to be scared because that's what the Chachamim's Takana was. The Takana of Chol of Yisrael was that the non-Jew should be scared to add anything non-kosher. Yeah.
If you were going to a farmer and asking for some milk, I would have benefited. Obviously, he'd be scared. He would have benefited. He would have benefited.
So for whatever reason, no, so twofold. Number one, maybe it wouldn't, and the Pre-Chodesh would say it's okay, but the other, everybody else would say, who cares if it's okay? It's not okay, because you didn't accomplish the Takanas Chachamim, right? The Takanas Chachamim is, you can't have Chol of Akum. That's what we call Dover Sheba Minyan, Sarach Minyan Achra Latiro. You have to have Chol of Yisrael. So Rav Moshe says, yeah, but what is Chol of Yisrael? Chol of Yisrael means that we had supervision to the point that created a Mirtas. Yeah.
According to where Moshe said that it's only about the concern, correct? It's not about anything else. Then why are that people still do things even though like they're scared to do it? For example, if I steal money, I know that's wrong, and a cop could come and arrest me, but I could still do it.
Right, but we're not making a takanas chachamim that you have to be choshish that every Jew is a ganav. Only if you've proven yourself that you're a ganav. Then we're going to be choshish for the future. But if you have a cheskes kashrus when you're born, we don't assume that you're a ganav just because people have a yitzhar to steal. We assume that the normal precautions will protect against your ganeva, right? The fact that if you steal, you might get caught and sent to jail, etc., etc. People do steal and they do get caught and they do get sent to jail. Yeah, but that doesn't change the reality.
Yeah, but that's the point. People do, which means here that people can necessarily put non-kosher milk in and then you're drinking non-kosher milk.
Yes, but that's not the concern that we have is to fulfill the Takanas Chacham. That's our goal. Our goal is to make sure that you accomplished the Takanas Chachamim of there was somebody watching and that was enough to create a Mirtas. That's the goal. Do you guys have to go now? Okay, so I'm going to continue though. So if you can get a chance to listen to the rest, I'd appreciate it. I think hopefully it'll be beneficial as well. Maybe we could do musical chairs. I want to read it inside. Chelek Aleph Sim Mem Zayin. I gave you a bunch of tshuvas here because Rav Moshe wrote the main tshuva. If you looked at the end of Tshuva Mem Vav, is the first time perhaps he ever wrote about it. I don't know what the order of the publication of the tshuvas was, but they have it in the first chelek of Yoredeya. So they go Mem Vav, Mem Zayin, Mem Ches. I think Mem Tes has a little bit also. Yeah. So let's read it. So everybody, you want to turn. You know, everybody wants to say whatever they want. Meaning, in terms of what Rav Moshe writes, there are certain things that he writes consistently. So we're going to see those things inside. I don't like to leave too much to conjecture. You know, conjecture is fun. You know, when you're just schmoozing. But like when you're learning, you want everything to be very clear. So like at the end of the day, even when I mentioned in passing the Chazon Ish Shita that he seems to hold like the Pri Chodesh. So then you have the stipler saying, yeah, I didn't really hold like the Pri Chodesh. And you have I didn't give you the tshuva, but the Chalkas Yaakov, I always get mixed up between Chalkas Yaakov and Chalkas Yoav. But there, Rav Breish from Switzerland. He writes that he spoke to Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. This is Rav Moshe Soloveitchik from Switzerland. He was Rav Chaim Soloveitchik's grandson from another son. Rav Chaim had a few sons. And one of his sons had a son named Rav Moshe Soloveitchik.
Bob's first cousin?
But, yeah. First cousin. Meaning Rav Moshe Soloveitchik from YU, his nephew was named Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. He was a big post-Sake in post-World War II Europe. So he quoted from Rav Moshe Soloveitchik that he spoke to the Chazon Ish, and there's no way that he held halakha. And maybe that's all true. I don't know. But like, in the end of the day, what you wrote in your svarim is what endures. Meaning oral histories are fun and enjoyable, and if you personally were privy to an oral history from a particular Adam Gadol, that's great for you. And you could live your life like that, but like, that's not what's going to endure. You know, the classic work, Chazon Ish, is going to endure. You know, people who schmooze with the Chazon Ish, and like, that's pretty cool. But like, that's not going to endure in the halakhic system per se. So Rav Moshe writes here, let's go through it a little bit inside. And he quotes a number of sources in the Gemara to try to prove his point. V'davar cholav ha-company. You guys see Mem Zion over there? You have it? Cholav ha-companies, v'min yaseinu asher yesh pikuach mem shalah, im yarvu cholav behema tmeya ye anshu. They're going to be punished, v'gam yasgiru es ha-esek shalahem. And they will close their business. So he says, when the dairy, whatever, the FDA or whoever is in charge of this business, I don't know, they still have that simon on it that says real? Right. I don't know. When I was a kid, there was something called REAL. R-E-A-L. It was like, it stood for something about dairy farmers. But I don't know what it meant. But like, that was the simon that was officially endorsed by the United States Dairy Farmers or whatever. So they're going to close the business. Shilachin vadai mirtasei mila'arev. So he says, now they're certainly afraid to mix in non-kosher milk. Now, let's stop there for a second. Is this true? So the first knock that people are going to have on Rav Moshe's opinion is, it's just the Metzius is wrong. He's not right. They don't close down the business. They don't do anything. They just come and they yell at you. Right? Or they take a bribe. Right? They give you a small fine and you can bribe them and it's fine. So I just want to skip now to Tshuva Mem Ches on the bottom of the page for a second. Uvedavar mashik asati sharotze lahakil b'cholav shal companies sheim tachas hashgacha v'hamem shalah yesh lo tam godol mishum sheidiyah nechshava kariyah v'lo ha-yezeh b'cholav iser keva cha'asru rak be'en Yisrael ro'eh u'tam godol ashik quo Torah Rabbeinu shalach, even though you, my honored rabbi, you sent me a tshuva mi pakid hashilton, from somebody, a government official, shehaonesh al zehu rak me esrim v'chamisha ad meya dollar, it's only like $25 to $100 fine, v'gam ein mekavli shochda, right? It says, and they also take bribes. I don't know if you can get a $25 fine. What do you need a bribe for? But okay, it's kasha. But there was a 30-cent bribe. It's like, I just slipped a quarter into your pocket. You'll be on your way. So I'm not really sure what that means. I can't imagine the Metzius was ever that like a major dairy company would get a $100 fine. But like, okay, let's say that. Meaning I question the Metzius of the questioner much more so than I question the... But nevertheless, Rav Moshe sticks to his guns in Siman Mem Ches, even though the fine is so lame, and they don't really shut down the company. So let's just get that out of the way to begin with. So when he starts in Siman Mem Zion, that the fine will shut down the company, and it's a big deal, and that's why they keep it. That's true. But even if it weren't true, if it was just a small fine, and it was you could get out of it, he still holds in this psak. So that's an important thing to keep in mind. So back to Mem Zayin. So he says, Yesh tam gadol lahatir af below shitas ha-prichadash. Says, you don't have to get involved in the prichadash. I have the recording for the other guys. So he says, Mishum de ha-ikar di-yidiyah brurahi kiri'iyah mamish. Seeing something clearly, I'm saying knowing something is the same as seeing it with your own eyes. Now, this is the basis for Rav Moshe's Shita, is that what do we need in order to fulfill the Takanas Chachamim of Chol of Yisrael? You need a Mirtas, but the Mirtas has to come through Eidus, right? You have to be there, not Eidus as in like you could testify in court with Drishan Chakira, But edus as in, I know what happened, I saw what happened. So now, the main basis for Rav Moshe's Svara is that we have a concept of edus yediyah is like edus re'iyah. I'm going to give a few examples of this. So number one, he quotes Gemara in Shavuos. I don't know if you got a chance to look up these Gemaras. I think I put them in the Mara Makomos. I did. Yeah, Shavuos Lamed Aleph I did put there, as well as Yevamos Memhei, Tosos and Yevamos Memhei. Right, so those are the two things I wanted you to see, but let's see how Rav Moshe, if you get a chance to see it, it's very quick. Those are quick Gemaras. He says, first of all, we accept Yediyas Ora O Yada, right? That's in the sugya in the parsha of Shvua, Karban Shvua, right? In the parshas of Shvua Seidus, it says Ora O Yada. If he saw something or he knew it, meaning knowing it in the Gemara Darshan's Edus Yediyah is like Edus Re'iyah. If you know something for a fact based on, you know, proper inspection, proper knowledge, that's just as good in terms of edus mamon as seeing it with your own two eyes. And you could be motzi mamon based on such knowledge. That's important to keep in mind. So number one, Rav Moshe says, for the purposes of edus mamon, if you know it to be true, it's considered as if you saw it. That's point number one. Gedola mizuhisa bitosvos yivamis memei, v'shem yesh meforshim, Gam ledin re'iyas bezin letfilas ger ayin sham. Okay, so Tosfos there raises an issue, right? When you have a ger, right? So gerus in general is a fairly awkward process, but the most awkward part could be the end, right? What, either for a male, you have to have bris mila, so that's super awkward for the bezin to have to watch that, and for a woman, yeah, for a man to go to the mikvah, whatever. That's just like going to the mikvah in a lot of men's mikvahs. You know, everybody just goes for it. But for a woman, what's she supposed to do? This is mamish, you know, it's pritzus, like the beis din, like we're going to get the big rabbis to go stare at the woman while she goes into the mikvah. So Tosfos says, has a few different approaches, a short little Tosfos, worth seeing, right? And it says, Yesh Mefarshim, there's some who say, and this is accepted halacha l'maaseh today. If you talk to Rabbanim who deal with Geirus, they'll tell you, yeah, what we do is, she goes into the mikvah with a bathrobe on, and then she just spreads out the bathrobe, and they see her, they see what looks like her going under. They don't have to watch her, you know, go under without a chatzitza, or maybe some of the batanim, they turn around and they face the other way, and she goes under. They hear the splashing noise as if she went under, and they have a mikvah lady who's there watching her for real, and that's enough. You just have to know it happened. It's not, you don't have to see it with your own two eyes. This is gerus. This is a big deal. You need to know that she went into the mikvah. Right? The answer is yediyah is kiriyah. Knowing it to be true is the same as it being true. You saw with your own eyes. Right? So that is the second raya that Rav Moshe has, that yediyah is kiriyah. Yeah.
Are these two things considered
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Meaning, Mark can go back and forth as a conversation and say, you know, this is one opinion, this is the other opinion.
Right.
So I'm saying, is this one opinion or is this considered to be the conclusion?
No, halacha, we accept this. Halacha, we accept the concept of edus yediyah kiriyah in a number of cases. So we definitely, that's halacha lamaisa, this is what we do by Geirus. Halacha lamaisa, we don't do Shavuos edus anymore, but we would, you know. And another example, two more examples that he gives. One is subject to machlokes. We're short on time, so I'm not going to read it inside. But another example is this: it's a machlokes achronim when it comes to edus lekiyum adavar. Right? Edus lekiyum adavar is like the edei kiddushin at a wedding. Right? Edei kiddushin at a wedding. Sometimes the edim they have to be on top of their game. They watch the guy put the ring on the finger. Sometimes they don't watch. Right? You know, sometimes they forget to look. Right, or sometimes it comes out after the fact that the Adim were pusel or related or whatever. Right, you have a wedding where it's a problem. You ever heard of such a thing? It happens from time to time that the Adim. yes and no. Maybe yes, but maybe that makes it worse because there are a lot of krovim and psulim in the stand, so whatever. So, for example, the Chasam Sofer is Mekel. He says that if everybody in the room saw them standing under the chuppah and they saw that they came back acting like Chasam and Kala, that's already enough. That's Eidus Yediyah. So the Chasam Sofer, I believe, is Mekel for that. Others are Machmir. They say, no, you actually have to see it, right? Let's say the photographer's flash goes off right in the face of the Eidim as soon as he's putting the ring on. But you know what just happened. Like, there was a ring in his hand. Now it's on her finger. So what do you think happened? You know? So you didn't have to see it, Mamish. So that's already a Machlokes by Eidus L'Kiyum Adavar, which is a different kind of Eidus. Meaning we're not... Normal Eidus, we say, Lo Ivri Sadi El Shakri. Did you guys ever do this, Reb Chaim? It's like a world-famous Reb Chaim, it's Chalitza. About the difference between Eidus L'Kiyum Adavar versus Eidus L'Birur Adavar, right? Those are the yeshivish terms that we use. Ironically, Reb Chaim doesn't use those terms in the Sefer. But, okay, no, that's what he, retroactively, that's what he used. So So if the Eidim are there to as part of the ceremony, meaning the Eidim are not there to say, like, don't worry, the Chasam and the Kala are not lying. They are married. Like, no, that's not what the Eidim are there for. They're there to formalize the ceremony, to create a certain chalos. They're there to create the Kiddushin. So part of creating of a Kiddushin is that the has the Eidim. Right? Good enough. You know, who's the least important person at the under the chuppah? Right? Who's the least important person? Right, the Masada Kiddushin. Why do you have Masada Kiddushin even? So there's a Gemara in Kiddushin that they made a takana called Sheino Baki B'Tiv Gittin B'Kiddushin Lo Yelo Esek Imayim, that you have to, you should be somebody in charge. But Meikar Adin, they say Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, one of Rav Aaron Soloveitchik's big things that he was machmer for was Chadash. He held that Yashan and Chutz La'aretz is a Din D'Oraisa, and there's no heter to eat Chadash and Chutz La'aretz. That's valid, except for maybe the Bach. But he held that if you eat Chadash and Chutz La'aretz Memezid, you're Posseleidus. So a lot of times that he said unless you know the Bach. He said if you know the Bach, that's good enough. So he said if you don't know the Bach, you're Posseleidus. So if you know it and you're relying dafka on the Bach, you're relying on the Ramaz Svek Svek, that doesn't work. So Rav Aaron, somebody who was close to him told me that he used to sometimes switch with the Masada Kiddushin. Like the Masada Kiddushin would be there, and he knew it was a guy who was not Makbid, or he knew he wasn't such a great guy for other reasons. And Rav Aaron would say, oh, you're so much more, and that guy was supposed to be an aide. And Rav Aaron was supposed to be Masada, so he would say, oh, you're so chashev, you're really closer with the family than me. He says, you be the Masada Kiddushin, I'll be an aide. So he would switch with the guy. So the Eidim are much more important than the Masada. But on the flip side, the Eidim aren't really that important. You could argue that the Eidim aren't so important because we already have Eidus Yediyah. Everyone knows what's going on. So at least the two Kasher Eidim who know exactly what happened, who saw exactly what happened, and therefore it's okay. So that's a big discussion in the Achronim. But at the end of the day, if Eidus Yediyah is not good enough for Eidei Kiyum, it's only a quirk in Eidei Kiyum. It's not because we don't like Eidus Yediyah. That's the whole point. Meaning, so Rav Moshe's point is that you just throw it in there. There's a lot of halachos, right? You guys ever hear about the machlokes between Rav Moshe and Rav Yosef Elio Henkin about secular marriages, whether or not secular marriages have the status of a real marriage, perhaps based on the concept of Eidon Amosa Bilasa Bilasnus and Hein Hein Eidi Yichud Hein Hein Eidi Bia. These are all concepts that rely upon the concept of Eidus Yediyah, that you don't actually have to see it if you know exactly what's going on. The concept of Eidi Yichud, right? You have Eidi Yichud at every wedding. They stand outside the door. They don't know what's flying in there, right? I'll tell you what's flying in there. They're probably eating, right? They've been fasting, so they want to have something to eat. But technically, they have to be in the room long enough that nature could have taken its course. The point is that these are all Eidus Yediyah. We have Eidei Yichud outside the room. They don't see what's going on. They're outside the room. They know that they were Mesiachei. That's all. Right? So it's all based on the similar idea of Eidus Yediyah below Eidus Re'iyah. And one last case, he says, we even accept, and this, if you guys learn Makus, you know this one, right? We even accept Eidus Yediyah when it comes to Dine Nefashos. Right? How do we accept Eidus Yediyah when it comes to Dine Nefashos? Right, so you guys remember that Gemara at the very end of the first parak?
You turn the corner, isn't that a thing?
No, no, that's what, before that, before that. What? Right? We had a machlokes in the Mishnah about how often the Beis Din kills. Right? So two of the Tanoim said, oh, if we would have been around, we would have never killed anybody. And they answered them back, no, then you would have been Marbe, you know, Marbe Rotzchem Yisrael. You guys know what I'm talking about? So they said, we never would have killed anybody. What? Right? So he says that, so then they said, well, I don't get it. How would you have succeeded at never killing anybody? How would you have said that you don't kill anybody? Right? So he says, no, well, if it was a case of Ritzicha, we would have said maybe he was a treifa in the exact spot that you stabbed him. Right? Maybe we said he's a treifa. So we would have come up with these heterim. But that's only because there's this whole mitzvah of the Tzilua Eda to try to not give Misa. But it's not because we know there was no, it wasn't a treifa over there. You know, come on, what are you kidding? Yeah. The chances of that, that's where he had a hole in his lung, right where you stabbed him in the lung. But no, you know he didn't, you know? But there's a special din d'oraisa that when it comes to these things that you're supposed to try to not give the guy misa. And they said, what about by Arayos? She said, oh, by Arayos we would have said that you have to see kemit chol b'shvoferes. Right, you have to see the actual maisabia properly. Otherwise, how do you know what's going on? Maybe they're not being megal. Maybe not committing arayos. So then they said back, no. What are you kidding? He says b'menafim ad sheniru k'menafim. If they're acting, if they're doing an act of miuf, they're doing an act of arayos. It just has to look the same. Like if two people in a bed together, they're not playing chess. You know. So that's it. That's all you need to know. You don't need to see the actual mikol b'shvoferes, and therefore, and Tosfos elsewhere points out, or Moshe quotes Tosfos elsewhere points out that this idea is that because when it comes to Gilui Arayos, it's not right that you should have to stare at them ad kivei kach that you should see exactly what's going on. So therefore we say that the regular rules apply as opposed to the normal rules of Mises Beis Din. You know that wouldn't apply under these circumstances. So the regular rules apply. So the Eidus Yedia, you see two people in a bed. I Lemaisa, you know what's going on. So that's good enough. That's as if you saw it. So all of these cases, Rav Moshe says, Eidus Yedia is just as good as Eidus Re'iyah. And this is the klal that he says. This makes all milk into Chalav Yisrael. In other words, it's not about, well, there's no din of Chalav Yisrael like the Pri Chadosh. If there's no din of Chol of Yisrael, the Pri-Chadosh would say, you can go to any farm you want and just drink some milk. Right? No, Rav Moshe says, you have to go specifically to a regulated dairy farm that you know that there are government inspectors that come. That's considered Eidus Yedia. It's considered as if it was supervised by a Jew. Since I know what the government is doing, and I trust their supervisors to whatever extent, not that they're going to shut down the whole company necessarily, but there will be a fine to the extent that it creates a mirtas, it creates a great inconvenience. I'll give you another example. You go to 7-Eleven. It's a mushel. It's not the same thing. You go to 7-Eleven, and you want to buy a Slurpee. Right? So are you allowed to buy the Slurpees? Right? What does it say? It's Coca-Cola Slurpee. Right, I go on my handy CRC app. I look at the list. Right, if you don't have the CRC app, you should get it. It's if you don't have a smartphone, don't get one. But if you do, then you should at least if you have one, you should get a filter for it. They have some good filters out there, and you should also get the CRC app. I think the filters allow for it. So the CRC has a list of all the kosher Slurpees. So you get, you know, it says Coca-Cola, Fanta, whatever, anything with the Fanta on it, I think is always on the list. So Fanta, Wild Cherry, Slurpee. So how do I know that what it says on the label is really what's in the machine? Maybe it's not Fanta, Wild Cherry, maybe it's Frank's, Chas v'Shmaltz, Cherry Cola, right? So there's tons of, I have to tell you a true story that any time when I was in Rosh Hashanah Shir, any time Rosh Hashanah would say something non-kosher, it was always Chas v'Shmaltz. That's it, every single time. So I was like, what? There's no Chas v'Shmaltz. What are you talking about? Like, it was just one of those things. I'm like, yeah. So you have one piece of kosher meat and you have one piece of Chas v'Shmaltz. Like, not everything is Chas v'Shmaltz. So it's very funny that a friend of mine was once, he's been fairly successful in the business world here and there. And he was once working for a company in California, I think. And they had on a company seminar, so they had the CEO of Domino's, you know, they had CEO of Domino's spoke to the people. So, you know, at the end they were taking questions and the questions were a little lame. So he's like, all right, I'm the token Jew, I'll ask. You know, so he raised his hand. He says, how come you don't have any kosher franchises? So the guy said, well, two main reasons. He says, number one, he says, well, our marketing research hasn't really shown that opening a kosher franchise would really be advantageous to us. And he says, and I'm sorry to say the second reason, but you know, I really feel this way, that we just think that kosher pizza doesn't taste very good. So he was like taken aback. He's like, okay, so you can't have pepperoni, you can't have meat on the pizza, but what else? What else is the difference? It's all the same. So he's like, no, for starters, he's like, you don't put lard in your crust. He's like, they're actually, this guy's in a shul to share with me. He's like, there's actually chaser schmaltz in the crust. He's like, there's real chaser schmaltz in the crust. They put lard in the pizza crust. So next time someone tells you, oh, I looked at the ingredients, it's all kosher, like, there's lard in the pizza crust. You know, the CEO of Domino's said that's what makes it taste good. So it's important to keep that in mind. So anyway, just getting back, there's a... So we have this idea that Rav Moshe is saying that Eidus Yedia is enough to make it be considered Chol of Yisrael. Again, not that we don't need Chol of Yisrael. You need Chol of Yisrael, but this is Chol of Yisrael. So okay, so skip now towards the second to last paragraph. You see the first one line is Ula Hakel. Oh, I'm sorry, so skip one... four lines before the last paragraph. Anyone who wants to rely on this and to be lenient, he has a good reason. And he's allowed. He says, like many people who keep the Torah and many rabbis. And you certainly can't say that they are doing the wrong thing. But nevertheless, he writes this every single time. He says, if you want to be machmir, there is room, it's fitting to be machmir. The ein bazemishim yuhara, it's not considered showing off. And I myself am stringent. I do it. I keep Chol of Yisrael. And anyone who wants to be machmir, so anybody who wants to be Mekel has the right to do so. It's not considered that he's not being careful with Isur. And furthermore, he says, so what about Hataras Nedarim? Let's say you have a problem of Hataras Nedarim. So he says, the difference is, why were you keeping Chol of Yisrael? Were you keeping Chol of Yisrael because you thought it was the din? Or were you keeping Chol of Yisrael because you wanted to be Machmir? He says, if you were keeping Chol of Yisrael because you wanted to be Machmir, and now you're in a situation where you can't keep Chol of Yisrael, now you have no right to... I'm sorry. If you were keeping it because you thought... What did I say? You wanted to be machmir? So then you have to do Ataras Nedarim. Because you were keeping it as a chumrah. So if you're keeping it as a chumrah, you have to do Ataras Nedarim to not keep it anymore. Which is some poskim right. That's why there's this thing going around that you're supposed to keep Chol of Yisrael during Seres Yimei Tshuva. It's not true. You're supposed to keep Pas Yisrael during the Seres Yimei Tshuva. That's what the Shulchan Aruch talks about. Now you could argue, well, the Shulchan Aruch held you always have to keep Chol of Yisrael. So that's why they say, yeah, but the problem with Chol of Yisrael is it different. We'll see, God willing, soon we'll learn about Pas Yisrael. I have the Makoros for it ready to go. So if you get started on that. But we'll talk about Pas Yisrael. Pas Yisrael actually might just be a Chumrah. Right? So then if you're keeping it at the Torah, it's not Meikar, then you know what you're doing. Chol of Yisrael, either, if you hold like Rav Moshe, you are drinking Chol of Yisrael. And if you're going to then start keeping Chol of Yisrael, you're keeping it dafka as a chumra ba'alma in that sense. It's not like one of those dinim that there's room for mega. So then you would really need a Taras Nadarim after the Seres Yimei Tshuva were over to get out of drinking Chol of Yisrael for the future. So it's not necessarily a wise decision unless you know going in that you're just doing it b'toras chumra and you should do it dafka bli neder. Then it's not the end of the world. But that's why I always thought people just make a gzeira shava, Yisrael, oh, Pas Yisrael, Chol of Yisrael. The Shulchan Aruch only talks about Pas Yisrael. Right, so so you want to say that's a gzeira shava, Chol of Yisrael, Pas Yisrael. Okay, that's your gzeira shava. I say in anam dam gzeira shava me'atzmo, but you could say that that's the gzeira shava you want to make. Yeah.
If we go if we go and say that okay, these reasons are not necessarily something that we care about anymore, and there's no chash, what room is there to be nach?
What?
No,
so Rav Moshe says, because look, in the end of the day, this is a svara. This is my svara. I think my svara is right. But in the end of the day, it's a svara. So I want to just go and give you what I think is the main weakness in Rav Moshe's Svara and why some people don't rely on it. And I just want to give you what why I think Rav Moshe's Svara is a little bit weak. And one Svara which I think is also valid, but in the end of the day, I think I'll tell you why. Again, halacha v'lola maisa, why I think you it's worth it to. It's worth it to rely on it. Yes, what do you want to say?
In your Moshe Svara, is he holding Dina D'Malchus Adina? Because, like,
no.
He's believing in the government that this...
That's not what Dina D'Malchus Adina means.
But he's at least...
He believes the government is doing a job, yeah. He's saying, they sometimes take bribes. But you have to ask yourself, meaning... you should read all the tshuvas. It's very worthwhile. But he's just saying, like, you have to ask yourself... So, we never finished up the Frank's Chazer Schmaltz Marshall, but that's the point. Meaning, you have to ask yourself. So, you say, like, maybe the Slurpee case. This is the answer to your question, I think. So, the Slurpee case. Why do we assume that what it says on the Slurpee machine is what's in there? Why do we assume that?
Because we believe
it. There's two main reasons. Reason number, and both apply to milk, right? Number one, there's a mirtas. What's the mirtas? Government's not going to do anything.
But if they find that the ingredients are wrong, they can. Yeah.
So Mr. 7-Eleven is going to come down on this branch of 7-Eleven and they're going to say, you bought a 7-Eleven franchise. The way 7-Eleven, the company, makes money is that they sell all the franchises, same with Dunkin' Donuts, everything. They sell their stuff that's made in the central factory, they sell it to their stores at a pretty high price, I think. So even though it would be cheaper for them to maybe go to the supermarket and buy Frank's Chazer Schmaltz Kola and put it in there, so they're not going to do it. There's a mirtas that they're not going to do it because then they could lose their franchise. They could lose their whole business. Come on. You think you're going to get caught this one time? Like, no, but you have to ask yourself, why would they do it? This is the business that they went into, right? This is the business that they went into, understanding there were certain regulations. Doesn't mean there's no Yetzer Hara to circumvent the regulations. It just means that in the end of the day, you have to ask yourself, is there a reason to assume that they're not doing what they said they would do? A lot of times, there is a reason to assume they're not doing it. But here, when there's such a downside to getting caught, right? Even if the downside to getting caught is a small fine, but you're not going to go out of your way to do something which is working around. It happens to be in the dairy farmer, it's better because there's no cheaper milk available. It's not like you can argue that maybe this 7-Eleven guy could make a deal with somebody on the side and get a cheaper Slurpee mix from a different company. Here, by the milk case, there's no cheaper milk available. If you're going to milk something else, it would be more expensive. It would be worse, right? So he's keeping the government regulations because of the mirtas and because you have to ask yourself, why would you do it, right? Once there's a mirtas, it's just keeping you in line that you're not going to step outside yourself and do something else that there's sort of no point to doing. What?
Never always know if there's mirtas.
No, but you have the right to assume. You have the right to assume that there's a mirtas.
Do you have the right to assume that there's not a mirtas as well?
No, that's his point. I mean, he's saying like, the government regulations are not strong enough. He's like, yeah, but it's strong enough to keep them in line. They're not going to go out of line for no reason.
Can you say that the mirtas is based on a chazaka that almost everybody is going to be afraid?
Yeah, of course. No, but that's what I was saying before. All these cases of Eidus Yediyah. All these cases of Eidus Yediyah that you don't know the vados what happened, but you have the right to assume that this that people are. Meaning, the concept of Eidus Yediyah is almost like you have the right to assume that given a certain set of circumstances, people will behave normally, right? You see, b'menaf imachinir kiminafin. There are people who sleep in the same bed and never have relations. It happens all the time, you know. But you have the right to assume ad kedei kach you could put them to death. Right, that if they were in the bed and they were acting a certain way, you would assume that they were being normal. Right, the normal thing to do is what you assume they were doing. Right, same thing with the kiddushin, same thing with Eidus Mammon. Right, you have the right to assume that once you knew the circumstances were such, people reacted in a normal way. Right, that's what he's basically saying. Okay, but then he says again, you don't may not rely on my svara, and he says, and it happens to be, and later on he says, by yeshivos, it's worth it to spend the money because there's a chinuch involved to teach them that, like, B'nai Torah have the right to be machmir. So he says that, he gives an example. I gave you that tshuva also, I think, that he said, when it comes to yeshiva, spending its money, they don't even have so much money. He says, you should spend the money for Chol of Yisrael, it's worth it because there's a chinuch element. He says, yeshivas have to spend the money on chinuch. Right, so if the basketball team has nicer jerseys, not nice jerseys, like that's a separate issue, you know. But in terms of anything chinuch related, So they have to spend the money. You shouldn't skimp on the money, and therefore, even if the Chalav Yisrael is more expensive, you should buy the Chalav Yisrael. Within the family, there are those who say, I've heard this from reliable sources, there are those who say that nobody besides Rav Moshe himself drank Chalav Yisrael in the family. In the family, there was always Rav Moshe's milk in the fridge, and then there's everybody else's milk in the fridge. Again, I can't claim that that's definitely true. Some of his Talmidim don't drink Chalav Yisrael. Some of his Talmidim dafka drink Chalav Yisrael. It's very hard to say. So what practical? This is what he writes. Okay, let me just give you what I think is the weakest point of his. Yeah.
So I thought that is he saying since you have Eda Sudia, it is Chalav Yisrael.
Yes.
But we should be machmir on the OU the Chalav Yisrael next to it part.
The OU doesn't send rabbis down, I don't think. I don't know. I take that back. I don't know what
the
OU does.
You'll see OU milk. It's the Chalav Yisrael milk. You'll see it's like OU and then it's the Chalav Yisrael next to it.
Right.
OU, the Chalav Yisrael. Is that considered a separate thing than what Chalav Yisrael actually is according to Rav Moshe? Because he says...
Rav Moshe would say, yes, there is room to not rely on the Svara. It's a Svara. So he's saying, he says, I know what I'm saying is a Chiddush. If you don't want to rely on this Chiddush, don't rely on it. And he says, I don't even rely on it. So he's saying, I think it's right. He again, all the other tshuvas that he has about Chalav Yisrael are just people who wrote to him to yell at him, and him saying, no, I really think I'm right. every time. They're like, you sure you're right? He's like, yeah, I'm pretty sure. It's like, but, okay, so the main reason that I don't think, that I think the weakness with Rav Moshe Svara is that the difference between his Svara and the Pri Chadash is not so pronounced. In other words, there's definitely a lot of room to say that all those who rejected the Pri Chadash would also reject Rav Moshe. In other words, since the Pri, what's the Pri Chadash saying? Like, in the end of the day, you know what's happening. You know it's not. Now the argument against the Pri Chadash is, yeah, you know it, but that's not an official fulfillment of the Takana. So I think there's definitely room to make that exact same argument against Rav Moshe, right? So Rav Moshe would say, it's kosher. The government comes once in a while to inspect. So he's saying, yeah, but that's not called Yoshev Bitzad Edro. That's not called Yisrael doing the inspection. It's not an official fulfillment of the Takana. Einachinami, if everybody was willing to lay down money, I think everybody... Whether you drink Chalav Yisrael, whether you don't drink Chalav Yisrael, everybody would bet lots of money that all the milk that comes out in the United States is kosher. Right? But that's not a fulfillment of the Takana. So in other words, the Chasam Sofer's rejections of the Pri Chadash, you could argue, would also reject Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe saying no, this is a fulfillment of the Takana. Is that really true? Rav Moshe is basically saying, Eidus Yediya, that creates a mirtas is enough that it's considered that we fulfilled the takana of Chalav Yisrael. I'm not sure that that's so. You could definitely argue that those who reject the Pri Chadash would also reject Rav Moshe. Again, Rav Moshe is not the Pri Chadash, but the rejections of the Pri Chadash might also be rejections of Rav Moshe. They're not actually similar. The Pri Chadash says we don't need the Takana of Chalav Yisrael. Rav Moshe says this is a fulfillment of the Takana of Chalav Yisrael. Pri Chadash didn't have government inspections. Pri Chadash, you don't know that the Pri Chadash would agree with Rav Moshe that if you needed the Takana of Chalav Yisrael, this would be good enough. You hear what I'm saying? Yeah.
Is it that the Eidus creates the Mirtas, or shouldn't it be that the Mirtas creates the Eidus? That because they have that here, that's why.
Well, in other words, the inspection creates the mirtas, and we have a yediyah of what's going on because of the mirtas. Okay, so let me just finish up. So Rav Soloveitchik, apparently, you can get it online. There's a Rabbi Jachter published in the TABC Torah Journal. Rabbi Jachter published I can print you up a copy. I just pasted three articles. He wrote three articles on Chalav Yisrael, and they're on what you can get them on the articles on YU Torah. On different opinions, Rabbi Soloveitchik's opinion, Rav Moshe, those who disagree with Rav Moshe. I think, by the way, if you feel that you learned up the sugya very well, I think you should, if you read Rabbi Jachter's article, you'll really enjoy it, because he does a lot of name dropping, but you'll be able to see how you know who all these people are and what they actually say inside. It's a very geschmack feeling after you've done the sugya to read different people's tshuvas, read Rav Moshe's tshuvas. He doesn't make so many references to the Makoros like we had, but it's definitely worthwhile to check it out. Because yeah, I'll send it to you. So he writes that Rav Soloveitchik was somech on three svaras. He's basically said that he didn't use any single shita, but he had three sneifim lahakil. This is what poskim do often, is that if they don't think there's one perfect raya that it's mutter, but they have three decent rayas, then that they say overall it's a good enough kula. Right? So number one, the pri chadosh. Number one, he says, first of all, it could be the pri chadosh is right. So okay, so we say he's outvoted, but at least he's certainly good enough that if you're in a shas adchak, you could rely solely on the pri chadosh. Like, let's say you're stuck in a country that just doesn't have Chalav Yisrael. You know? So you could... What?
I don't need to drink milk.
Well, in general, the concept of Shas Adchak is when we say Shas Adchak, generally speaking, there's always, like, you could always live without it. Everything, you can live without everything. You could subsist on bread and water. You know? But in the end of the day, you want to have a bowl of cereal and you're not in a place, you have no access to Chalav Yisrael. What?
Why can't you watch it?
No, because that's not available. You're in Amsterdam. I don't know. Right, it's the thing, the pre-chadosh, I said Amsterdam. But you're in Amsterdam, and assume Amsterdam doesn't have official government regulations. Right? So you could rely on the pre-chadosh. You're entitled to drink a cup of coffee in Amsterdam. You know, you want to have some milk. So that's one nekuda. So second of all, Rav Moshe's svara. I think he said the same exact svara prior to Rav Moshe writing the tshuva, but it's a pretty obvious svara. And Tzvi Pesach Frank writes that svara also, that government regulations creates Eidus Yediyah. So he says, even if you didn't like any one of those two svaras on their own, maybe the combination of the two is certainly enough to be Mako. And number three was this chiddush that he came up with. He said, maybe if you want to say that the whole thing is a Davar Sheva Minyan against the Pri Chadosh, maybe that only applied when they were milking the cows by hand. Nowadays they don't milk by hand, they milk by machine. So he's saying that, okay, that's a discussion, because the Gemara, when it's this, we're not going to do the sugyas of Yayin Nesech, but the Gemara, when they're discussing Yayin Nesech, discusses that we're even machmir for Yayin Nesech when the non-Jew doesn't actually physically touch the wine, even if he just touches something which touches the wine. But we dafka don't say that by Chalav. Right? So maybe by Chalav, yes, you have to fulfill the takana. The takana was a davar sheva minyan, but that davar sheva minyan was only when they milk by hand, not when they milk by machine. Not that when they milk by machine, it's more kosher. Just that wasn't the takanas chachamim. Takanas chachamim took a certain format; it didn't take formats in other things, like we say by butter versus cheese. Butter and cheese, same vart. Yeah, but butter is butter and cheese is cheese, and there was never a takanas chachamim against butter. Right, so maybe you could say the same thing by milking by machine. Another svara to be made, Rav Shechter likes to say, is that in addition to the idea that you have because of the government, I think I once heard Rav Shechter say that the government wouldn't be enough in his opinion. He thinks the government regulations are not strong enough. He says, but because he doesn't drink milk for other reasons, that's his own thing. Yeah, okay. So, but the he doesn't keep Chalav Yisrael. I'm saying. So no, but I'm saying, like, even when he did drink milk, I don't think he was dafka makbid. You know what? I don't want to say that. I
does he only drink his daughters in?
People in Chalav Yisrael.
So people
in the house, I don't think keep Chalav Yisrael dafka, but the other svar is very similar. The OU uses this svar is that since everything's done by machine, the takana doesn't apply. But everything's done by machine. The machines wouldn't fit on any other animal besides a cow. In other words, what are you going to have these places? They're pumping out thousands of gallons of milk, you know, every day, and then they're going to like hand milk a pig? They're not going to do it. It's impossible. Like, the whole thing would be the biggest tircha in the world, you know, like so there are countries where they milk camels, so they probably in those countries they have camel milking machines. But we don't even have any camels locally. They're not going to the zoo and getting a camel to milk the camel. Like, it's not, you know, it's not shy. What? What do you mean?
It's so easy right now. I mean,
everything's easy. No, I don't understand what you're saying.
No, one day there will be a thing where you just put the pig on the machine and then milk the pig just as easy.
But why?
It's different.
It's just a pump. You ever seen them milk a cow? It's a pump. It's a space for the udders, and they put it on the bottom of the cow. It pumps it out, and that's it. Saying that it would need a different size pump for all the different animals. Or even if they had an adjustable pump, so that makes sense. Like you're saying, like, okay, so now we're going to do a run of pigs. We'll adjust the pump for the pigs. Right, I'm sure that company that my brother bought from to get the pig's milk for his daughter, like, they don't do it by hand. You know, they have a pump also, but like 99% of the, all you need to do is do an inspection of the plant, and you see that they don't have any pig pumps. You know, so it's not gonna. So that's another svaralaka. And just the last to close with this idea. One thing we got to keep in mind is what we said in the first shir, I know a couple weeks ago. Say, like, what are we talking about over here in the first place? So, the vast majority of the postgame, the shach and the prisha, and they hold. We're only talking about issur derabanan to begin with, right? The chashash. Let's say they did everything you said they weren't going to do. You violated issur derabanan. Now we don't like to violate issur derabanan, but the question is when you're looking for chumras in life. What chumras are we looking for? We're looking for chumras on Isurim Darabanan or chumras on Isurim Daraisa. So generally speaking, we should at least start with our chumras. You know, once you become such a big tzaddik that you're machmer on everything, I don't know. So then you could have chumras on Isurim Darabanan also. But we're looking, so if you're looking for chumras, so you should dafka be machmer in something that's protecting an Isur Daraisa. Here, the takana was probably only protecting an Isur Darabanan to begin with. So therefore, I think that there's a... With, if you mitzdarif all of the shitas, you have the prichadash, you have Rav Moshe, you have the svara about the maybe Rav Soloveitchik's other vort that maybe it doesn't apply to machines, and the fact that the machines don't even fit on non-kosher animals. I think that, listen, if you want to be machmer, Rav Moshe says, nice to be machmer for drink only Chol Yisrael. But I think when I first got married, I asked my wife if we should be machmer Chol Yisrael. She's like, no, we're not. She's not allowing it because the milk goes bad so quickly. I don't know if that's still the Metzias. That was already a number of years ago. But I thought maybe they started refrigerating the trucks since then. But what?
What's what they do is they just leave it out early, right? That's an iron. I don't understand why.
I don't know. No, it's not. It's not the cow doesn't do anything differently. No, it's just they have to refrigerate it properly.
Yeah, like, I don't understand why they have to refrigerate it properly.
I don't know. you have to do the research. No, it's not a din in Chol Yisrael. It's not the Jew who's inspecting makes it look bad. Makes it bad quicker.
I don't know if it's confirmation bias, but like my older siblings keep it, and my mom always like complains. Like they're both married.
No, it definitely used to be true. It definitely used to be true that the date on a Chol Yisrael milk bottle meant nothing. Like whatever you think the date is, like.
Well, apparently my mom like spoils way faster.
Right. So it definitely used to. I don't know if it's still true. It could be that it's not true anymore. You know, we're not going to get into the discussion of Chol Yisrael products. Spoke to a couple of guys, right? If you want to read Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank's tshuva on the powdered milk and milk ingredients and things like that, it's possible that even if you keep Chol Yisrael, there's more room to be makel for ingredients like on a Hershey bar or in other things where they add the milk from powder form or they add it and the goy creates it in a separate form. So even though you say like, oh, there are people, they only keep Chol Yisrael for milk. Or ice cream, you know, they don't keep Chol Yisrael for chocolate bars and things like that. There is definitely room. It's not just like, what are you doing? Like, if you keep it, you keep it. If not, not. Like, no, there is room to be machalik. You know, so these are all great topics to discuss at a different time. And we actually call. Guys, we'll start at Pas Yisrael. So if you get a chance, I don't think we'll have shir tonight, but God willing, we'll have regular shir tomorrow. On the topic of Pas Yisrael. So I have the Makoros. I'll just staple them if you want me to staple them, and we can get to work on that. So God willing, you know, if you have time today, tonight, to get work on Pas Yisrael, it'll be fantastic. It's 10:40.